You are listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at opensocietyfoundations.org.
It's an honor for me to introduce Michel Montas, who will be the first speaker in this part of the program. Michel Montas is a journalist, very famous in Haiti because she is the widow of Jean-Dominique, a very famous Haitian journalist who was assassinated in 2000, and we're still waiting for his trial. And as they say in French, l'enquête se poursuit. For those of you who speak French, there is an old saying in Haiti. En Haïti, on ne poursuit pas les criminels, on poursuit les enquêtes. Haiti, they don't go after the criminals, but they go after just the investigation. So Michel, en plus elle a été membre du conseil d'administration de Focal au moment où Focal a été créé en 1995, de 1995 à 2001.
English.
I'm sorry. Michel Montas was also a member of Focal's board of directors since Focal was created in 1995 until 2001. And she has been involved in the struggle for human rights in Haiti since she came back from her studies in the US and in France. And Radio Haiti, who was Jean-Dominique's radio, has played a tremendous role in the promotion of human rights, the promotion of freedom, equality. Radio Haiti was the first to introduce Creole in the news and in different programs in Haiti. You know, most of Haitians, at the time, the great majority of Haitians were still illiterate and their only language was Creole. So having a radio at the time, an AM radio that used to cover the whole country, where you could give, have several programs in Creole, in culture, but also in news. And the astuce for Radio Haiti was that Jean-Dominique was able to use the issues that were going on in different countries and make as if they were happening in Haiti. You know, at the time there was a struggle in Nicaragua or in Iran, and that was very interesting the way this radio permeates everything that was happening in Haiti at the time of the dictatorship. Twice the radio was shut down, and twice Jean, Michel, and the family had to go in exile. So Michel, recently, she was the spokesperson for the Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon. And now she will tell you herself what she does, because I kind of lost track of her in the past 2 years. So anyway, we're very pleased to welcome Michel. Thank you for having accepted to come. She's going to talk about the Duvalier issue, because she's one of the plaintiffs against Duvalier since he came back to Haiti. And that there a group of about 22 plaintiffs decided that this could not be, and as they have been victims of the dictatorship, they decided to go and try to see if they could bring Duvalier in trial. Michel, thank you very much for being here with us.
Do I have to push this? You would think that I would know how to use a microphone, right? I would like to thank first OSF for hosting such a rich event. Daniel Magloire has been coordinating very efficiently, I would say, our collective effort to bring former dictator Jean-Claude Duvalier to trial in Port-au-Prince. asked me to present a summary of that effort, of the support we have received, not least from OSF and from Focal, of where we now stand and of what the stakes are for Haiti and for our common struggle against impunity. And I think Maître Jean-Joseph Exumé will talk a little further after I speak about the larger fight against impunity. Maître Exumé, former Minister of Haiti, of Justice of Haiti, who has been pushing our plea to the Haitian court, is with Daniel right here. I mean, I was going to say on our panel, but Daniel is sitting over there. And they will go into the legal implications of the case. They are both in the fire. I am in New York. So they have been both working on a daily basis with the issue, and believe me, Daniel is relentless. They have been doing it in Haiti on a daily basis, and they can better than I can answer the questions you might have a little later. Allow me to start on a personal note. I lived in fear and in silence when I was 12, 14 years old, never fully understanding why there were so many taboo subjects at the kitchen table, at the dinner table, or at school, or why there were, on a memorable day, April 26, 1963, dead bodies in the street where I lived. In the summer of 1964, I was 17, my family had to go into hiding as an aunt and four cousins were summarily disappeared. It was under the dictatorship of François Duvalier. I became a broadcast journalist because I could no longer accept the deafening silence of my childhood and because I refused to hide ever again. I think most Haitians who, from 1957 to 1986, some of them are in this room, lived through the 29-year dictatorship of the Duvaliers, father and son, share similar memories that have had a profound impact on our lives. 50 years later, we are 29 plaintiffs with the support of Haitian and international human rights organizations demanding that so-called President for Life, Jean-Claude Duvalier, be accountable for the massive violations of human rights under his 15-year-old regime and for crimes against humanity. In April 1971, he had inherited our country from his father like a piece of real estate, along with a ruthless, repressive machine. Overthrown in 1986, he returned unexpectedly from exile on January 16, 2011, a year after the earthquake that ravaged parts of Haiti, killed more than 200,000 people, left more than a million without shelter, and leveled parts of our capital, Port-au-Prince, destroying in the process so many places of memory that were part of our identity as Haitians. Considering the difficulty faced by the country at the time, and considering the prevailing climate of impunity in Haiti, Duvalier could have imagined that he would never be prosecuted, and that without prosecution, he would quietly reclaim his assets frozen in Swiss banks and be reinserted in Haiti's political future. He was summoned by the public prosecutor the next day, and 2 days later, accused by a handful of victims of his regime, I was one of them, of massive human rights violations, crimes against humanity, and embezzlement. To us, beyond getting justice, our individual pleas meant symbolically speaking out on behalf of those who could not or would not speak out. We felt strongly that our individual grievances, executions, disappearances, illegal arrests, and detention, torture, or exile represented beyond the judicial case itself those of thousands of victims of the Duvalier regime from all social classes and walks of life who had been denied the right to justice. Pursuing the case against the former dictator before the same courts that had been so corrupted and weakened by years of dictatorship was also an attempt to jumpstart a judicial system that has been unable to respond to the demands for justice and to force that system to function. We hope, in the long run, through such an emblematic case, to make a substantial dent in the culture of impunity that has prevailed in Haiti since 1957. Our upstream struggle should also be inscribed in the larger historical struggle of the Haitian people for human rights. as the first nation that ended slavery on this hemisphere. Michel, Professor Dubois, and Professor Saint-Louis have all spoken about it. Haiti also supported liberation movements throughout the Americas in the 19th century. Yes, Vertus, they were part of a military system, but posed as a condition to the resistance to the Bolivarian Revolution that slaves be freed in each respective country, each one that would be liberated. Haiti is also one of the 19 signatories of the Nuremberg Charter and a founding member of the United Nations. Our first pleas for massive human rights violations were filed in January 2011, 3 days after the unexpected return of Jean-Claude Duvalier. The government at the time had, to the public prosecutor, reopened a previous lawsuit brought against Duvalier and associates in France, the US, Switzerland, and Haiti, among other countries, essentially for embezzlement of public funds, but also for human rights violations. The following month, we created the Collective Against Impunity that brought together 22 of the plaintiffs and 4 human rights organizations. Today, an appellate court in Port-au-Prince still has to decide on whether Duvalier should be tried for massive violations of human rights, murders, tortures, forced exile, or simply for financial crimes, as a lower court judge had ruled earlier. When Jean-Claude Duvalier was forced this year to appear before the court, the few international journalists who covered that hearing spoke of a trial as they would of the Rios Montt trial by a criminal court in Guatemala City, apparently unaware that we are still far from a trial and are still at the instructing phase, or if you prefer, the investigative stage, and on what will be, and we expect to be, a long, rocky, and very dangerous road. From February to May 2011, each of the plaintiffs and Jean-Claude Duvalier himself testified once before the first instructing judge, Carves Jean. Only one of Duvalier's former ministers was heard, with the same questions being asked of each one of them, with no further investigations being carried out, at least as far as we know. On January 2012, the instructing judge ruled that Haitian law did not permit claims of crimes against humanity, and he dismissed those charges while upholding claims of financial crimes, of embezzlement, to be treated by a criminal court as a simple misdemeanor, punishable by a maximum jail term of 3 years. Previously, the prosecutor in the case also had decided that the Haitian Penal Code's statute of limitation prevented any prosecution for the murders, disappearances, torture, and other grave violations of human rights committed by the Duvalier government from 71 to 86. Analyzing the decisions rendered by the prosecutor in the case and by the investigative judge, Bill O'Neill stressed that both decisions are riddled with errors of law and fact. The collective declared immediately that it would exhaust all existing resources against that court order. I quote, "This time, on this emblematic case, impunity will not prevail. There can be no democracy without justice." An appeal was immediately filed, and hearings were scheduled before the appellate court from December 13, 2012 to May 16, 2013. The collective has consistently denounced the noxious atmosphere of these hearings inside and outside the courtroom, the lack of the most elementary respect towards the victim, treated as if they were the accused, and the strange attitude of the prosecutor, supposedly there to defend society, but systematically siding with Duvalier's lawyers. The collective and our lawyer, Maître Dumé, have also noted that the instructing file, composed essentially of documents from the Duvalier side, was never available at the appellate court. Furthermore, the plaintiffs were constantly confronted by the threats uttered by pro-Duvalierist mobs outside the courtroom. By May 2013, when the hearings were closed, most of the plaintiffs, members of the collective, or those represented by Maître Mario-Joseph, had never been heard by the appellate court. We feel strongly, however, that considering the prevailing political environment, that we won one major victory. When, on February 28, 2013, this year, Duvalier was forced to appear in court as a defendant and to answer the questions of the three-judge panel. Today, 6 months later, no ruling has been issued, and the appellate court has not even announced a date for a decision to be rendered. In case our demands are once more rejected, we will go to the Haitian Supreme Court, and once all national means have been exhausted, we will go to the Inter-American Court. We have, throughout a painful 18-month process, received the active support of several international instances, civil society associations, and human rights organizations. In February 2011, a month after Duvalier's return, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights reminded the Haitian government of its obligation to investigate the well-documented, serious human rights violation that occurred during the rule of Mr. Duvalier and to prosecute those responsible for them. I quote, "Such systematic violations of rights cannot remain unaddressed. The thousands of Haitians who suffered under this regime deserve justice," said Navi Pillay, who called on the Haitian authorities to send a message to the world that their national courts can ensure accountability for serious violations of human rights, even in difficult humanitarian and political contexts. A month later, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon declared that it is of capital importance that the Haitian authorities take all legal and judicial measures in the case of Jean-Claude Duvalier. Trying those who commit crimes against their own people is a clear message to the Haitians that impunity will no longer rule in their land. Following a deposition by our collective against impunity on March 28, 2011 in Washington, the Inter-American Human Rights Commission ruled that the government of Jean-Claude Duvalier was characterized by systematic violations of human rights, such as extrajudicial executions, forced disappearances, and torture. Under international law, such acts constitute crimes against humanity. The prohibition of such crimes, the fact that they are not subject to any statutory limitations, the obligation to investigate and punish them, and the absolute prohibition of torture are now part of the jus cogens. In other words, these are imperative norms that states cannot fail to comply with. Haiti has now a unique opportunity, says the court, the commission. The investigation and punishment of these crimes could become a fundamental step in strengthening the rule of law and restoring confidence in the Haitian justice system and an example of good faith compliance with international commitments. Then the Ministry of Justice under the Préval government represented the state of Haiti at the March hearing and pledged to prosecute the violations of human rights under the Duvalier dictatorship. Human rights organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have documented this violation with evidence of arbitrary detentions, torture, death in custody, killings and disappearances during Jean-Claude Duvalier's rule. Lawyers Without Borders in Canada, the International Center for Transitional Justice, the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, and Human Rights Watch have supported the Inter-American Commission and have urged the government of President Michel Martelly to assign enough human resources to the investigation and to the prosecution. They have called upon the international community to support the fight against impunity and the search for justice in Haiti. In our case against the former dictator, our collective against impunity has received legal support from the Open Society Justice Initiative with an advisory amicus curiae filed with the court in December 2011. And please let me thank you for this. It has received steady technical support from Lawyers Without Borders Canada, who have worked with us throughout the process, and legal advice from Human Rights Watch, from the High Commissioner for Human Rights Office in Haiti, and other international instances and organizations. FOCAL has actively supported the work of the collective from the start, with a series of activities rebuilding and nurturing memory, with films, exhibit, conferences analyzing the impact of the dictatorship on today's Haiti, or creating a space for the survivors to speak out in a country where most Haitians are too young to remember the repression of 1957 to 1986, where many of those who lived through both dictatorships, have chosen to shroud in silence wounds that were never healed, and where the tumultuous transition to democratic rule, the many military coups, the political assassinations left unpunished, and the mass murder that was the earthquake of January 2010 have pushed many into indifference or voluntary amnesia. Several roadblocks and an adverse political climate have made the path to justice a difficult one. They were obvious from the day Jean-Claude Duvalier returned unexpectedly from his exile in France when he was escorted to his residence by policemen on motorcycle. A revisionist discourse has been attempting to rewrite history and to convince the young that things were better under Duvalier. This aggressive campaign has at times used threats and intimidations, as when a group of Duvalier's partisans tried to disturb a press conference on September 22, 2011 by Amnesty International around crimes committed by the dictatorship. Members of the collective have been confronted over and over again with verbal attacks and threats in front of the courthouse. Arguments used by Duvalier's lawyer that the Haitian Penal Code's statute of limitations prevents any prosecution for the murders, disappearances, tortures, and other violations of human rights committed by the Duvalier government were widely circulated in the media, with little space being given to the opposite argument, the existence of conventions signed by Haiti and of numerous international rulings establishing that there can be no statute of limitations for crimes against humanity or disappearances defined as ongoing crimes. Amazingly enough, political parties which had been nearly decimated under the dictatorship have kept silent. The sight of the former president for life circulating freely in restaurants or jazz concerts sent a clear message of ongoing impunity, at least until he was forced to testify before the court. The attitude of the present neo-Duvalierist government has reinforced that message, with President Martelly declaring early on that he was ready to amnesty Duvalier at a time when the former dictator had not even been charged. He visited the former dictator, as he did other former leaders, and officially invited him last year to the commemoration of the second year anniversary of the January 2010 earthquake. The collective and other civil society organizations have denounced the tendency to trivialize the dictatorship and its contempt for legitimate demands for justice. Moreover, the state has taken no measures to concretely use the technical assistance offered by the Inter-American Commission on the Duvalier case. There was no request for information, nor any search for evidence addressed to other countries or international instances. In spite of the pursuit by the previous government against Duvalier, the former dictator has been given a presidential pension, his properties have been returned to him, he has a diplomatic passport, and police protection. It is not surprising that well-known Duvalieristes are members of the present government, with the Minister of the Interior being the head of the Duvalierist party, the PUN. Beyond some declarations of principles, the international community has done little, if anything, to pressure the Haitian government into meeting its human rights obligations. A letter addressed to that effect by our collective to Latin American troop contributors to MINUSTA, the United Nations Stabilization Mission in Haiti, has received no answer. It's only after public appeals last February that diplomatic missions in Haiti, the OAS, US, Canada, France, Switzerland, assigned observers to the proceedings at the appellate court. The ambivalence of the international community was fully illustrated by a handshake, Jean-Claude Duvalier, Bill Clinton, at an official ceremony, a photo that went viral on the internet. Some exception though, the Swiss Federal Administrative Tribunal confirmed last September the blockage of the Duvalier funds, about 5 million Swiss francs, frozen since 1986. The tribunal agreed on seizing the funds that would be used to improve the living conditions of the Haitian people, to reinforce the rule of law and the struggle against impunity. It is ironic that while other dictators are being tried throughout the Americas or elsewhere, the weight of pursuing the case against Duvalier still rests on the victims' shoulders. The prevailing political context has brought heavy clouds over an eventual trial that would be fair and impartial and would bring a truthful light on a regime that has disastrously impacted on Haiti's present and its future. our quest for truth and justice, has been essentially about constructing the rule of law in a democratic state where basic freedoms and fundamental rights would be guaranteed by an independent and impartial judiciary concerned with the common good. It is time that Haiti becomes empowered by its past, confronted instead of being its victims or simply ignoring it. Shocked by the attempts of some of Duvalier's partisans to revise history, a campaign was finally launched this year through the media by a number of victims to mark the 50th anniversary of April 26, one of the darkest days of the dictatorship, that day when, as a teenager, I saw slain bodies littering the street where I lived. More and more survivors, some still obviously traumatized, are now speaking out and bearing witness once more, as some did in 1986 and 1987 in public venues and above all in the media. Rebuilding memory at a time when a number of Duvalieristes are back in power and some dictatorial tendencies are resurfacing is allowing to raise the thick veil of 30 years of repression. Whether the appellate court accepts or rejects our claims, speaking truth to power has been a welcome development of the last 18 months. The devoir de mémoire, the duty to remember, is perceived by more and more people as the need to remember so as not to repeat the past. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you for this very brilliant, I would say, account of everything that has been done, including your personal memories of the dictatorship and everything that has been done by the collective against impunity to see if we can bring justice to this situation. I'm asking my former Minister of Justice, Jean-Joseph Exumé, who's been the lawyer accompanying the whole process since the beginning, who is going to give us a short account of the judicial part, the judicial aspect of the process Michelle has so brilliantly told us about. Thank you again, Michelle.
Okay, thank you. First of all, I would like to say that it's very difficult to take the floor after to Michelle. But at the same time, it's good because I will be forced not to enter in the case itself because Michelle has already given all the information. But I would like to stress on some points. It's very important for me to try to understand the situation in Haiti. Why the justice system is so weak? Why we can't have a trial of Duvalier? By considering the situation, I think that first of all, we should question what I call a poor human rights culture in Haiti. The problem is the following. Haiti has ratified important international instruments such as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. In the American system, Haiti is a party to the American Convention on Human Rights, or Pact of San Jose, 1979. Haiti has also accepted the jurisdiction of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, 1998. And Haiti has ratified the Inter-American Convention on the Prevention, Punishment, and Eradication of Violence Against Women, Convention Belém do Pará, 1997. There are universal instruments, there are standards, internal standards, but the Constitution of Haiti, Article 276.2, states that international treaties or agreements, once approved and ratified by Haiti, become part of the country's legislation. I could say that all is present to have application of those instruments, but it's not the case. Why? Why? It's because there is an ignorance of the judges, the litigants, students. No one knows those instruments. And normally, they can't apply. Even if you go to a school of law or the state university school of law, there is no place in the curriculum for such studies. It's the reason why, for me, there is a contribution that human rights organization should bring. It's try to spread, have a division of international history. The school of magistrate, etc. The second reason that I could say is the fact that laws in Haiti are very obsolete. If we take the criminal code dates 1825, 2 centuries ago. And normally, it's clear that the criminal code that we have today couldn't incorporate new offenses such as terrorism, money laundering, drug trafficking, most of the financial crimes, crimes against humanity. We couldn't have that in the code because it's 1825. And the procedural code is worse. Because in the procedural code, criminal procedural code, we have, the system, the inquisitorial system, that which have friends before. This system is the one which prevent the plaintiffs to be, accepted by the court. There is inequality of arms. Is the system inquisitorial? But is it true that when we leave this system to go to the accusatory system, we have to be careful too? Because so, if you don't consider the sociology, the system, the history of the country, it's possible that you have worse than the inquisitorial system. And I think that you work on Guatemala. Everybody knows that in Guatemala is not very, very successful. Okay. The third reason that I try to see is what I call the failure of the justice system in Haiti, which can be seen as a great source of impunity. And we create an injustice for those who cannot afford a proper defense. In Haiti, if you have money, you have defense, you have lawyers representing you. Look, the system itself, I would say, is a source of impunity. One can characterize the system as a slow justice and excessively formalist. Very often, when they can't go to the farm, when they go to the merits, they stay on procedural details to avoid going to realize the case. There is a laziness, I could say, to be nice, a laziness of the judges and the public prosecutor's office. The example that Michel gave about the prosecutor in Tuvalu's case in the appellate court is really a scandal. The prosecutor was worse than the Duvalier's lawyers. There is a lack of respect for the disposition of the law, about the punctuality, the work schedule of the judge, the delay for giving the court decision. When you have pleaded something, and you have the keys in the judge's hand, you will never know when we have a decision. Even if the law states that it's 1 month or 3 months, but you never know. It will happen in Duvalier's case in the appeal court, because we can't say that the decision will be given, let's say, in 3 months or 6 months. It may be 1 year. And we don't have any recourse against that. We have a penal chain, I would say, which is not very functional. There is a bad relationship between the police and the judiciary, between the public prosecutors and the judge of instruction. There are very often conflicts of authority. We have this problem of case management, which lead on the big problem of the preventive detention. There is a practice of abusing of criminalization. Even a little offense can be considered as a crime. In Haiti, there is a system. They call it association malfaiteur. I don't know how to translate in English. Association malfaiteur. That means it's a big crime.
Criminal conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Criminal conspiracy.
Exactly. Or there is no ground for that in many cases. But it's a way to send you to the judge of instruction. And we have the problem of accessibility to the justice system. There is a weak coverage of the territory. There are many places in Haiti, chiefly in the provinces, we don't have any infrastructure, any justice system. You have the cost of justice. The judicial tariff is not respected. And we don't have to forget the barrier of the language. There is a discrimination between Creole and French. And of course, we have the corruption. But when we are talking about corruption in the justice system in Haiti, it's huge. Everything. A judge can take the decision, can take the file without giving the decision. It's a way to attract someone to come to say, give me the decision. It's a source of corruption. Let's say some quick words about the Duvalier case, because I think that Michel has already given. I think that it's really, for me, the symbol. The Duvalier case is a symbol of the bad shape of the justice system in Haiti. It's because we have such a system that we have Duvalier case, because we could prosecute him. Not only him, but all those who have committed crimes. Because for me, we have enough grounds, even if they don't accept the term, crimes against humanity, but in the criminal code itself, even if it's so antique, we have grounds. Because I can find torture, I can find disappearances. It's enough to bring him to the court. And don't forget that we have also the fact that there are the international instruments, chiefly the Inter-American Convention. I will say that it was at least positive, the fact that Duvalier was brought in front of the judges, and for the first time, okay, he has presented some arguments, even it was so weak. Let me conclude. I think that the requirement for establishing the rule of law, essential to the development of the country, are so slow to establish, to be established precisely because of the impunity that characterized the Haitian justice system. Lawyers, activists on human rights are very alone. There is a loneliness because very few candidates are available because it's for various reasons. The fight is dangerous and it's not profitable. We could go to young lawyers, but they are not motivated. At last, let's say that we have what I could say a lack of support from the question of human rights. And those who are sometimes dedicated and who risk their lives. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to say one word of thanks once more. I would like to thank the OS Foundation for all the help we have received on the Duvalier case. Justice Initiative has helped us. I mentioned the amicus in December 2011, and we have received continuous technical support on the case and in the courts, and to us it is a precious support. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know if anybody wants to ask questions and or react. We plan to take one or two because we have to conclude. Lorraine and I have to comment on question. Few reactions and questions.
One more thanks to Avocats Sans Frontières.
Maybe you want to say something,
yes,
Pascal? We have after him.
Pascal has been doing so much work with us, and he has been with us all the way. With Lawyers Without Borders, and that is very, very precious to appreciate it.
I would like you to say something after him.
Yes, actually, I had the opportunity to do an interview with Claude Wauzier. I'm sure you were. Claude Wauzier, by the way, was somebody that was arrested under the Duvalier regime that spent, I think, 11 years tortured. And by the way, we have to put things a little bit more in a frame that I think is a little bit more global than just Haiti. Don't forget that the Duvalier regime, when it did this criminalizing of the population in a large way, it was done under the notion of the Cold War, which was fighting communism. So everybody that had a national position, nationalists were also communists. Just like today, with the United States having heralded this new era of terrorists, that's why you mentioned the word terrorism, because it's the United States terrorism. You know, so it's there, that sort of project this kind of world, so that's what we're dealing with today. But Claude Wauzier, by the way, you know how he was killed, Michel? He came out of the courts, he was hit by a car. His wife had told him not to go. Yes, I'm not sure you're aware of that.
No, I'm sure it didn't happen that way. I was with Claude Wauzier. We were together in Haiti at the time, and he was with us. We were the first four people to testify. Claude Wauzier was one of the four.
Yes.
Okay. When Claude Wauzier died, we know of all the circumstances. I'm sure Daniel can tell you a lot.
I'm getting this from people that are close like that to him, because I was in Haiti. But he came out. He was hit by a car. Not badly hit, by the way, but he didn't want his wife to know. He went home. It was his new wife. This is not from people that are walking on the street. Those are people that are like that with him. And he died. But what the important point that I'm making here is that I had, because of him, because I did an interview with Claude Wauzier on the show that I did on Radio Omega, which is Passé Sans Frontières, and he was able to bridge me with a community in Haiti, which is in Croix-des-Bouquets, La Tremblée in particular, with Jacques Voltaire. And
what's the point?
I'm just giving this point so that people understand what happened, because Michelle gave one particular stuff which is very important when she found dead bodies. But these people were arrested. Those were cultivators within that region of Guadalupe, and they suffered immensely, were imprisoned for something like 9 to 10 years. These people were tortured, were beaten for 7 days straight, with them falling on the ground. And this
is something I just would like to say, that 9 of the plaintiffs on our case, of the 22 plaintiffs, are from the La Tremblay area, and they are filed with us on the in the suit against Duvalier.
And Claude Wozier is part of the collective. He died. Claude Wozier is a member.
That's what I just said. I'm aware of that. I'm giving specifics.
We're not going to argue about specifics, okay?
Right.
Unfortunately, Claude died, so we're not going to argue about how he died.
And
again, all these persons from La Tremblay are part of the collective, as Michel said.
I wanted the community, I wanted the people here to know of the amount of torture they went through. That's pretty much, most people don't know. Most people don't know that these people lived in those jails for 9 to 10 years, nude, could not shower, could not do this. Most people don't know, so it's important to tell them.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other comments? Yes, please, you want to come to the mic?
Good evening, everybody. I don't intend to ask a question. I think mine is to just add a voice to the issues that have been addressed so eloquently by Michel, and to say that for a moment there, when I sat on my my seat, I felt like she's taken me back home in Kenya, where I come from. The struggles, the demand for impunity, the demand for justice sounded so too familiar for me, and for a moment there, I got emotional, because these are not things we can be nice about. I'm coming from a country where two of its powerful people are actually facing trial at the International Criminal Court. That's the president and his deputy. And you know for sure during the 2007 general elections, the two communities that both represent have had long historical, you know, indifferences. And they now came together for purposes of winning an election. And the voices of the victims were never brought to the fore. So it's, for me, it's very encouraging to actually hear that even though we are confined by geography and language, the struggles are the same. And to say that indeed, yes, we can, and we are going to demand that justice, we are going to put an end to that impunity so that then those that we serve and we stand for can actually live a better day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pascal Parisien for Voice Without Borders Canada. We have had the honor and great privilege to collaborate with the collective since the return of Jean-Claude Duvalier to make sure that this case will go forward. I'm always, it's really raising my spirits to hear what you said, that yes, we can. I would just say that yes, we can, but it's tough, and it's going to be a long way. I would like to thank Michel for such a striking account of the state of the case, and Jean-Joseph for explaining the legal intricacies of the case. I would like just to insist on a few points. The first one of which being that this is a marathon case. It's going to take a while. We've been talking about Mr. Jean-Claude Duvalier, but the fact is that it's a regime that is at stake now. The collective has always been adamant to say that it's Jean-Claude Duvalier and many more former ministers, former generals, and so on. So this case has to expand to other persons of the regime. It's been focusing also, because the resources are very limited, to Port-au-Prince, but the regime was active throughout the country, so it will take resources and so on. What I'm getting at is that this is a case that demands a lot of efforts, and the fact is that we're facing very courageous persons that have taken on Jean-Claude Duvalier by themselves. They didn't wait for anybody. When he was back a few days after, the plaintiffs were filing their complaints, and this is something that must be understood as very difficult for the persons. You have to come to terms with your own personal story. You have to go forward with the complaint. You have to face a very difficult legal process. As Michel and Jean-Joseph were explaining, this process has been sometimes undignified with insults, the partie civile, the complainants being all alone, whereas the prosecution should be helping on the case. It's not the case. It's been under the radar too at the international level. We heard a bit about it when it started, when Duvalier came back. We heard a bit about the case when it started, the hearing started at the Court of Appeal. But the truth is that it has not been getting the kind of attention it deserves. We are here in New York, in the heart of the United States. I think that the appeal here is for all of us to help muster support for the case. We have to talk about this case. It is very important. We have talked about the Rios Montt case. Rios Montt is the former dictator of Guatemala. In a landmark case, he was condemned to 80 years in prison for genocide a few months ago. Lawyers Without Borders has been helping also the victims in this case. It's been annulled, but it's a landmark case. I would say that the Duvalier case is very similar to the one. Here we have, we are with individuals trying to get justice in front of a national tribunal for crimes against humanity. So this case deserves attention. I could talk about Canada. I'm from Quebec. I was explaining this morning that our Minister of Foreign Affairs was in Haiti some months ago, and he was saying that it's scandalous that Mr. Duvalier is going to fancy restaurants and is now attending jazz concerts, as you were saying. But then he came back, and then we came to see him and said, okay, there is a collective, they're trying to get justice, would you support the case? And there has been no reply. So let's work all together on raising the profile and saying that, yes, we can. And I salute the efforts of the collective, and thanks for helping us, helping you.
Thank you, Pascal. François?
Thank you for this amazing testimony about what's been going on. I have two questions. One is, speaking about the fact that there's been relatively low attention, public attention internationally on the case, is there something like a website on the case or a Twitter blog or something that we could use to disseminate more news about what's going on? Because it sounds like there's a lot of twists and turns that are of interest, possibly. So that's one question. And the second one, is the strategy, therefore, to exhaust the remedies domestically and go to the Inter-American Court? And given that you're talking about delays that may go on and on to such extent that it becomes clear that the court actually doesn't want to render judgment, is there a moment where you're going to say, you know what, we'll go to the Inter-American Court because we're going to say basically they're stalling it out in such a way that basically they're showing us that they will not give us any satisfaction?
Blog? Website?
No. So far, there is no blog, no website. There is the idea of a website that is being created.
Il est en construction, il n'est pas encore ouvert.
It's not open to the public yet. It's being done with some partnership with foreign colleagues from abroad.
If I can say something about that, it's very complicated for us to have this type of extremely important communication tools, because we need people who are competent in managing a website and who are capable of feeding it constantly so that it is alive and so that people continue to consult. It sounds very simple in the U.S., where everybody, all institutions have that. It's extremely difficult for us to put that together and to be able to pay people who are competent to actually manage this.
Sur la deuxième question. No, I wanted to add on the site that we have a lot of material. A lot of archival material has been coming out, and in the last since we marked the commemoration of the 26th of April, we have had a number of things over the internet that you can find in all over the place. What would be ideal would be to assemble that into one, fight against impunity or the Duvalier case. Because it goes way beyond the Duvalier case, as Jean-Joseph underlined earlier. You know, it's a fight against impunity, and we have lived with impunity for the last 50 years. And there is absolutely no end in sight. Daniel was talking about the amount of time. Jean-Joseph mentioned it could be a year, it could be more. You know, I've been waiting for 13 years for the case of my husband to be solved. You know, 13 years, it can take that long. However, I think it is also a choice. Going to an international court or a regional court has limitations, to the extent that what the court is going to do is to give recommendation to the government of the country we are talking about. There will not be any decisions for justice, really. And there will be no extended expose of the truth. And to us, it is essential that this takes place in Haiti. It is essential that things be said in Haiti, to Haitians, by Haitians. And to us, the fight against impunity is not something that we are going to get any resolve for if we go to an international court. Even though I did envy my friend from Kenya, that at least they have two people going to the criminal court. We cannot even have that.
Anyway, let me add something. Is it true that we could have a kind of strategy? Because in the Duvalier case, we are now in front of the appeal court. We suppose the case will go to the Supreme Court, no matter what the decision the appeal court gives. But anyway, I agree with that. It's not the ultimate. But the problem is a dilemma, because the system is so weak, and you don't have the political will. It's not very clear that if you go in front of the court, the Asian court will have justice. As a matter of fact, it's maybe preferable to go to international court, even if you continue. Maybe the solution won't be judicial, but we must have other ways to keep the fire burning.
Because there is such a thing as the court of public opinion. That's important.
What I had on this issue is that since the collective was against impunity was created, it's been very small, very, very under the weather, and yet
under the radar,
very timid, and yet when they went into appeal to the appeal court and the audiences were public, people started to come and be interested. And it started to create a momentum. Mm-hmm. And what we found gradually is that families that had been victims of the dictatorship started to talk for the first time, 50 years after. And there was a big, big emotion when they were reminded of what happened to them. For the first time, they went on the radio, and they created a small event with pictures that they had never shown to anybody. And Foucault was part of this movement because we had several exhibits at the foundation. The other thing was that was created recently is that at the École Normale Supérieure,
there is a teacher who decided that he wanted to create a small group, with a small group of students, a movement about a methodology for oral history. And they tapped into Paris 7, a French university, and a university in Argentina to see how they can start to build a methodology for oral history and start to archive all the documents that they will find. I know there is something like this at Duke with a student. So this, it's, if it were not the courage of these pioneers like Michel and Daniel and all the other ones that were plaintiffs, all this would have not been revealed. So we don't want to keep you sitting for too long. It's almost six. We're going to wind up. Lorraine, you say a few words and I will close this program.
I will just add that there are many things that are coming out of the quite extraordinary effort of the Collective Against Impunity. The group of people who were either direct victims or the children of people who were killed under Valley, this, even if they themselves do not recognize it, it came out of what was stirred by the collective. It's difficult to explain to the public and to the world the extraordinary hardship of going to the appeal court. This is what happened this year. I mean, the conditions under which it happens, the horrendous pressure from Duvalierist crowds outside the court, sometimes even people carrying weapons stepping inside the court. People who are talking to the appeal court about the conditions under which they were tortured or imprisoned, and in the room were their torturers.
Torturers
heckling and you know, insulting them. So, and this is not even a trial. This, we're still in the preliminaries. We don't even know if there's going to be a trial. So, but the fact that there is attention brought to this has created something. And we are very carefully bringing a little bit of attention to this. And it is fundamental, it is extremely important that this happens. Because at this stage, Haiti is suffering from such deep-seated issues that touching on the dictatorship to us and touching on the dictatorship with actors, with people who are willing to come forward and testify, whether it is in court or in front of a camera or in front of a small audience of young people, is fundamental. Something essential is happening in those moments, and it's extremely important also to have international support, but it has to happen in Haiti. It is the place where it must happen. In fact, some of the people who are talking today have told their story while they were in exile, but it's not the same thing. It is not affecting them in the same way. Some people are talking about things now in Haiti as if they were talking about it for the very first time after 50 years. So this needs to be said in Haiti. It is not easy. It's a very tenuous path. We are not being supported by the media in general in Haiti. But we're also trying to work on that, trying to bring certain journalists, some media, to a process of investigating, of looking at things in a different way, of listening to voices. This is not the general trend in the media in Haiti. Daniel mentioned that there's also documentary films coming out of this experience. Alain Antoinette, the Haitian documentary filmmaker, is going to come out early December. We are showing it on December 10th. A film about impunity. He has interviewed several of the members of the collective. And it's a film about impunity in general in Haiti. Maybe it's one film. We hope that other filmmakers will work on this. It's possible that Arun Peck, who's a very famous Haitian filmmaker, will also start on working on a film on the Tibetan regime. But all of those efforts are extremely important to support.
Thank you, Logan. I'm just giving the closing remarks. As stated earlier, the idea of human rights, equality, freedom are at the core of our foundation mission and vision. They come from who we are and from the choice we made to fight against inequalities, injustices, and violation of human rights that have plagued our history. But we understand, I guess you noted also, we understand very well that we are right in the middle of a paradox. That of having been the first, and that of giving the impression of being the last today. And our decision in creating the foundation was an understanding of that paradox and of making the choice of building an institution that would have the legitimacy based on honesty, transparency, credibility, and innovation, and targeting mostly the historically marginalized population of our country, children and youth, peasants, women organization, and giving access to education, libraries, culture, working in communities, urban and rural, creating spaces like our cultural center and the park as meeting places for segments of the population that would otherwise never be able to meet, to work together, to learn, to have fun, to educate themselves, to be trained. Our society is fragmented, and Focal wants to be an emblem of a meeting place, to give hope, a meeting place of social mixity. We work with several regional programs at OSF. The scholarship, thanks for being there. We like you, Martha. Public health. I don't know if
Marie is not here, but
I think she's no longer there. But Françoise, Françoise.
Yes.
Step by step, the children.
Early childhood.
Latin America. Thank you so much, Sandra, for having been with us for how many years? 5 years? 4 years? And good luck in your new endeavors. The Justice Initiative, Michelle and Jean-Joseph and Logan explained the support they are giving us. The SOAS Economic Development Fund. We are probably the closest foundation to New York, geographically. But sometimes we feel we are under the impression of being so far away from you. That gives me the opportunity to give you an anecdote. Once there was a director here, I will not give her name, but she was VP, and she once sent an email to all the foundations saying, "To be closer to you, we are moving to Budapest."
program, it is an occasion for being closer, closer to OSF, closer to you all, for a better understanding of the condition under which we work, for a better understanding of our hopes, our utopia, and our collective endeavor. Because Focal is not just Lorraine and Michel, it's Palette, it's Lucie, it's Events, it's Thierry, it's Vanessa, it's Daniel, it's Maud, and all the 60 other employees that make this foundation a great institution. Thank you very much for your attention.